Accession number 29423, reel number 6.
This is reel number 6, and it's Wing Commander John Freeborn. So you're back from Italy, and what did you do for... This was 1944?
I think it is.
And what were you doing for the duration?
Then I was... I went to the School of Admin at Morpeth. And I... When I pass out there, I was then posted to Hahn, and I didn't like Hahn, I didn't like Chester, despite the fact I bought a flat there, but I didn't like it. I'd had some unfortunate experiences there. When I was with the OTU, I had a very bad experience. I had a girlfriend, and I'd arranged that I would sleep with her that night. And her father was a miner, and he was at home. And the mother couldn't make out much, but he did. And they said, "Well, isn't it time you were going now?" I said, "It's only early." So he says, "Well, you've got to get back to camp." I said, "I've got a car." I said, "You've still got to go. Anyway, we need to go to bed. I work hard." So off I went, and the girl slammed the door, and I ran straight upstairs. And she said, the door to her bedroom, and I was in there. And I'd gotten to a wardrobe, and he came up. He said, "That bastard hasn't gone. I'll kill him." I thought, "We will too." So he's looking under the beds in every room. He's running around. He's dead when I get behind on him. And I thought, "Oh God!" And so I'm out of the wardrobe and under a bed. And then he goes looking in the wardrobes. And it had a bay window and a roof down which went over the lounge. So I thought, out the window, slide down the towels, my feet will catch the gutter pipe, gutter tree, turn over and drop to the ground. I went down a lot quicker than I expected. My heels caught the spouting. That came adrift, and I shot straight out and landed in a rosebush. And oh my God, my legs, both of my back, all punctured. Anyway, I'm up, and off as fast as I can go. And I was with a bloke called Stevenson. And he shouted, "John, hurry up and get him. This bloody car started." And it wouldn't start, it was a big of a car. And we had to set the car rudder on fire to start it. And so, it had a fluid flywheel, so you couldn't push start it. Because it didn't turn fast enough. The engine had to turn the flywheel to engage the automatic gears. And so, anyway, I pressed the starter, and it started. And there's two miners after us. And this miner from the other house, and this one. I said, I'll kill that bastard. When I see him, I thought, "I will never see me again." But we had some funny days. But the war has spoiled everything. They're so bad. And they lost their pals. And I often think about them now. A lot of them. And now they came and so happy, laughing, stupid. Could have been in trouble, whatever happened. They were quite determined. They weren't going to be getting in trouble. And they did. The two painters were shockers. They'd stand there and say, what's going on? Well, there's a card game being played on the beds. The other half of the dispersal lot was asleep there. And you chase me through. Little Peter said to Big Peter, you chase me through. And I go down the bed, land right in the middle of the cards game, and jump off and on the next bed and out at the other door. So that was it. And I goes, it's completely wrecked the card game. Money everywhere. And it'll be out the door, Peter chasing him. And this is a farce. Well, with an operations room there that wasn't used. Meteorologist used it, blows balloons up and things. But it had a wooden fence around it. A wooden fence was filled with air. It'd be about a foot from the side of the building. So Peter jumped up on the top of this one of these days when they upset the guard players. And he's laughing so much, he slipped. And he went between the building and the glass fencing, and with his big feet, because he was about 6'4", Peter, with his big feet, he couldn't get out, and he couldn't get down to take his shoes off. So he's there, give us a hand, let's pull me out, and they all weighed on him. And left him there. Oh.
Yeah.
That was down at Manston. Mm-hmm. They were funny days.
But
then I went from.
Right.
This is. Yeah, all out of sequence now. But I was at Harden. And I was sent from Harvard to Netherhaven, which was an old First World War aerodrome, probably one of the first. And a grass aerodrome, and it undulated like that. Down the runway.
But yeah, no problem. Okay.
It was alright, they were flying Dakotas and things there. And gliders, and the heavy glider service unit, where they repaired and made gliders, which was quite a big setup. And then we had about 2,000 terrorists that all came from the Doncaster Leeds area, and they were making parachutes for their second front. It was. They worked. Everybody on that camp. There was a 24-hour shift, so that every department worked 24 hours a day. So they had to be entertainment, and so I bought a cinema, and got all the seating outfit. I put it in our own cinema, or the business cinema. That made it very comfortable, instead of benches. And then the projectors were worn out. So I went and bought two new projectors. At that time, they cost £1,200 each, was a vast amount of money. But with so much money in the Institute funds, I had nothing to buy it with. And so we got there working. Not working, we needed a substation, power substation, to run them. So we took over by a power station, a substation. I forget what that cost, because it cost a lot of money. And we got that fixed up at a super, up-to-date cinema. And then we had a band on the station, and mainly from the blokes from the London big bands, from Jack Hilton and who's that dead lass, Joe Ross, from bands like that on the camp. And I found out they were off every 5 o'clock into Castletown, performing there. So this stops. So I put them on the sound system, do it on the dirty jobs, let it drain itself. So, and you're going out of this camp at night, you're going to entertain our own. And it finished up with 24 hours dancing and three parties. And it went on like this. I had a girls' football team, all equipped with all the gear, boots, stockings, trousers, jerseys, same for the blokes. The education officer got £60 a month to go into London and buy books. So we had a good educational side. And then we, Freddie Wills, the boxer, the English, do you know him? Well, he was on the station. He's the boxer, station commander, who was a big man. And they used to knock hell out of each other.
Okay.
From there, we had a farm. And I employed farm workers. We had a gardener on the camp who's there for paid for. So we got these, he found them in the village, and so we gave them a job. And money was coming in so fast. I only charged 6 months to go to the cinema. And so at the BSI meeting, they said, well, can't we reduce the money in the cinema? I said, yes, I don't like giving the particular distributors a lot of money for the films. I'd say, yeah, we'll put it on free. We'll put it on free. Nobody won. So there's a catch. There's the buggers up to something. So that was that. But then we had the tea dances every afternoon, and sometimes in the evening. That when they went on leave, I hired coaches to pick them up at the guard room, where they could then be taken into Salisbury. I used to hire a train to take them to London. Well, everybody was giving me money. Hire a train. They get the tickets for the people going. But I got 10% back, discount. If I put buckets out like that, they'd be filled in seconds with money. And so I said to the station commander, I've got sadly too much money here. I said, if the LNC auditors come, we shall lose it. We had money from premium bonds, or the equivalent thereof, from the First World War. I will get interest in all that money. And it just came in. It was unbelievable. I was selling produce from the farm to the nappy. And they then gave me 10% of what I charged them back. Why? This is the nappy system. So I was selling them stuff at a high rate price, getting 10% back all the time. So all this money's coming in. And we used to take a whole day to count it all to take it down to the bank. And oh, I used to take the money from the church parade. The Catholic priest used to go out of his mind because I took his collection. I said, you bother God and I'll bother the money. And so he got nowhere with it. But this is how it went on. It couldn't go wrong. The money just rolled in. Then we had a station commander's fund, which had to be accounted for. And then it was out. We gave him £200 a week. And that was a fortune in those days. And every penny of what? Got £30 a pram and a layer. So, who becomes this? Probably 50, 60. And we'd have about 20 waft pressures every week.
All of it. SJN.
We sounded my wife very happy.
12 U 00 32235.
And then we got a new station commander. A relative of Chantal Douglas. And the man was a complete ass as a group captain. He'd had TB and been invalided out of the Air Force. Anyway, he'd been cured. And Chantal Douglas put him back to the Hornchurch, to Netherhaven. And when the telephone rang, the AC rang up from a transport command we were in. He used to stand up and salute the phone. That's how stupid he was. And he'd have all the stones around the gap whitewashed it. And then he used to go out and call up the fire brigade. No fire, just to see how that happened. And of course, one young fella was chucked off the fire engine. Hit his head on me. One of his bloody whitewashed stones. It killed him. I said, I told you that was going to bloody happen. I said, that stopped our antics. They said, I'd like to fly again for Ebon. So he said, you've got the instructors. Endorsement. So yes, I've been to up over to the School of Instruction at Paris to be instructors. And so I said yes, right. And we had in Manchester. And so I used to fly that. And coming into land, every time you believe her, we push it forward and as your flaps go down. They're only tiny flaps. But no, they didn't push that forward, pull the bloody handbrake off. So each time we landed with the brakes on. Well, of course, I in the back could let them off again. And I told him, I said, if you do that again, I said, you walk under this bloody room. And they did. So I said, out. He said, you can't tell me to get out. I'm station commander. I'm group captain. You're an airway commander. So you get out. I said, I'm captain of this aircraft. I signed the Form 700. You didn't. I said, for being a sergeant pilot, I've still got the same authority. You'd have to get out. So I got out. So, what about a parachute? I said, carry that bloody thing. And I left him there. I had to walk back to the officers. But he was so stupid.
I was going to ask you, actually, if you came across any really good examples of good leadership. Was there anybody that stood out for you?
Sorry?
Anybody that stood out as being someone who had good leadership skills?
Yes, John Freeborn. With that question,
hello.
I took a shabby, scruffy, rotten squadron of dirty, untidy blokes. The first thing is, you've got blokes walking about in flying boots and airline jackets. Sergeant pilots and officers, make any difference. And flight commanders that didn't stop it. I kicked the flight commanders out. I got two new ones. I worked on them so well that one of them is a knight, is knighted, and is now chief marshal. And the other one became AOC 11 Group. So that was the start. And then I used to say, anybody I see in flying boots will be cleaning airplanes. And I shall fly them upside down before you clean them. And all the other drone out and everything. So they understood that I wasn't going to stand for it. As soon as you start to smarten them up, they're smarten up in the weather, smarten up in the flying. And they learn by copying your example. They learn by example. And that I learned very quickly in 74 Squadron, because the flight commanders and the sailors were all top of the tree, and they just, I'm going to be like him. And that is the way I learned. And discipline was the last thing I ever thought of in my life, because I used to say, I can't be disciplined. But by God, I could. I was. And I made sure that those around me were. And Mike Giddings was such a thorough man. That's why he became an air marshal. He used to go around the aerodrome. Was with army. I can't come to say. Belfast. And they say, when an aircraft's coming into land, do you follow it round and you don't see it? No, yeah, don't do these like that. Well, I said, it's time we learn, man. And how to lay it up, and how to aim something. And he'd do all these things, and he was very, very good. Then he taught himself to play the piano. You see the numbers. On sheet music, where they have the notes themselves on the bars, they put numbers underneath. And he taught himself to play the piano. That's numbers underneath. It was clever. But this was a great thing as far as I was concerned. And so you turn it to Mike Giddings, Paddy Harmison, three great leaders in the Air Force, all from copying me and doing what I said. This has got to happen. Because with people like Tracy, it was going to happen, and no messing. And with Samson. I was surrounded as a kid by leaders, and I was very impressed. I thought, I'm like that. Does that answer your question?
It does, yes. Thank you. It does, thank you. Well, it's very good timing as well, because we're at the end of the reel, so we're just about finished now. Unless there's any other comments you want to make, just as well. Any other comments you want to make, just as well?
I don't think so. I was glad to get out there, of course, I don't know. But then, of course, that 10 years reserve to do. And I was dogged by somebody who was a great friend of my lad's. I didn't get the medals I should have had. That's for sure. I never got a flipping medal for all those escorts we did with the Americans. And I did about 60 of them. But I did meet Badis of Milan, as I thought was a particularly bad bloke, and although an excellent shot, and shot a lot of airplanes down. We were escorting bombers, we could shoot airplanes down. But that's besides the point. I shot my share down. And things like that that stopped you getting medals. But there was somebody who could do the dirty on me all the time. And how it happened, and I never discovered who it was, but Milan was the prime mover. And then Milan told the CEO of 92 Squadron, I gave Freeborn a hard time, and now I'm sorry. But it's too bloody late. I didn't even speak to him then. That's how bad it got. But I forget his name, but I was just a signing with him at Duxford, and he told me. He said, well, I often talked about you. I was sorry the way he treated me. I thought he needed to be. And of course, plus I hanged in Italy. I was nominated for the Middle East Staff College. Stopped it. So I thought, right, I'm going to find a way. I'm going back to England. Not staying with this bloody idiot. But I didn't enjoy my stay that way. But you can read it in the book.
That's the Tiger's Tale.
Sorry,
that's the book called A Tiger's Tale.
Tiger's Tale.
By Bob Cossey. Bob Cossey, I think, is the author.
Bob Cossey.
Yeah.
Well, Bob Cossey is a journalist. He's written several books. And he's the honorary secretary of the 74 Fighters Association. And I was talking to one of the nicest men I ever met about to do with. Is Malcolm Smith. And he is the secretary and treasurer of the Fighter Pilots Association. But he's never been in the forces. He was a journalist in Ipswich. And the last RAF secretary packed it in, they gave him the job, and they've done a fantastic job. Oh, and he's a lovely fellow too. He's coming to stay with me with his wife in September. because I don't think the pen will. In fact, that they give him £5,000. To replace his car. But a great man as Malcolm Smith. Those people I admire very much. Those that I speak well of. You'll see a picture of me with an American pilot, Bill Waller, at Duxford, when they brought up a group of Thunderbolts over to an air school with Americans, a bloody Thunderbolt, and I did test flying with him on that, and we said, right, it's out of service. And I said, now we've got to go on with it. Now it's 12:30.
Yep, we're actually at the end of the reel now. We just finished the end of the reel, so if there was any last comment that you want to make.
Yes, we'd like to go to lunch,
I'm switching the tape off now.